a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 196. We are just trucking towards 200. I had kind of planned on the idea of maybe having a big ol' live shindig with a live show with callers and the whole nine yards and a studio audience, maybe at my shop here in Denver. But just life intervened, and it looks like 200 is not going to roll around during that time. Let's see, today's 96, then 97. Yeah, so 200 is going to fall next week. Well, as luck would have it, I am going to Cincinnati next week to hang out with my friend Tim Ferlin, who teaches at Xavier University. Tim Ferlin, won the single smartest, deepest, most soulful, real, engaging human being that I know. I adore Tim. Oh man, Tim is easily in my top 10. I mean, he's just one of my favorite human beings. If I were God and I was like, I'm going to make some humans, what kind of humans am I going to make? And I started working on I'd make some Tims. I'd make a bunch of Tims, but I think you just can only make one of some people. And I think Tim's one of those. But Cincinnati is down the road from Lexington, which is where the main studios of Breadbox Media are. So, going to be doing some interviews in Cincinnati. Definitely probably have Tim on the show semi-daily. And then John Leyendecker of Focus fame and another amazing guy that I'm a fan of is out there. So we're going to end up at least doing an interview. But I'm hoping to get down to Lexington and hang out and do some in studio stuff. So, I don't know, the Pokemon obsessed Jennifer Longworth is probably hearing this for the first time. So, no, we've talked about it. We've messaged a bit, but, I've been in contact with them. I just now made my decision and booked my flight. So, that's going to be interesting. So Cincinnati next week, it's going to be on Counterposition on the road. And so kind of mark your calendars for next week and save the week. So, well, let's see. I mean, get into rerun territory, today's 96. 97, 98, 99 will be Monday. So Tuesday night, probably not going to happen Tuesday because I'm traveling Tuesday. So probably more like Wednesday, Thursday next week, we're going to get we'll probably try to do episode 200, and I'm going to shoot for that being a show that you can actually call into. Maybe I can bribe somebody and get it extended. Maybe we can have a long show and we can I'll get all kinds of fun people calling in and we'll have a blast. So that's my idea. No promises. This is kind of late notice for people that will have to change their schedule to, do some things. So, so that's there's the housekeeping. I don't know what's, so yesterday was brutal. I had a really good morning, and then yesterday afternoon was just horrible. It was just so bad. It was like Murphy's Law. Just a ton of little things where each one of them is kind of stacking on to the stress. And by the second or third one, you're going, really? Really? Because it's just like it's cumulative. But then you start realizing that these seemingly small little inconveniences in moments of really, add up to a chain of events that end up with something really big. So if you heard my show yesterday, what started with us simply being out of change, out of fives and tens in the cash register at the shop, and them not having change upstairs, and me having to go to the bank, started a chain of events that ended with me pulling the front end of my car off of the clips. So it seems like it's staying on pretty well. I'm going to throw a piece of duct tape on either side so I can go to work. And then I'm going to have to go find someone to a body shop or something to pop it back on there. This has happened before. I know how it works. You know, it's not super expensive, but it's a pain. It was just like, so yesterday was brutal. And I don't know. I think, I've got stuff to talk about. I've got, you know, a bunch of little insights and ideas to talk about, but I'm having a hard time talking about anything trivial in depth right now. And so let me remind you, if you're new to the show, you may have noticed that you're listening to a Catholic media network, right? And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, I know what Catholic media is. This guy's going to do some catechesis. He's going to cast himself as an authority and probably talk about, make a bunch of intellectual distinctions about dogma, maybe clear up something on canon law. And then he's going to take callers and they're going to ask him questions about annulments or something. And he's going to answer them. No, that's not what we do. Nothing wrong with that. I have friends who have shows that do just that. People I love and respect in Catholic media who are doing that. And that's traditional Catholic media. Well done. That's just simply not what this show is. I am A, incapable of doing that, and B, unqualified to do that. It's just, well, I'm not completely unqualified to do it for the most part. I need really smart guests when it comes to canon law, but, that being said, we're just trying to do something a little different with this show. So this is like about every 10, I'm getting new listeners. So about every 10, 15, 20 episodes, I reintroduce the show. So the counter position is a play on words for my position on the world, which is from behind the counter, because I've been in the coffee industry for 23 years around that. And so I've been standing back here, you know, behind the counter, talking, thinking, trying to think deeply about reality, reading books, picked up a degree in great books from Thomas Aquinas College along the way. And while serving people coffee, wine, food, and conversation, I have just processed reality and all these ideas by talking to every type of human being known to man. So, and I drink coffee while I talk on the air. So you get the break of the slurp every once in a while. So I how to say it, I'm not formed by the Catholic bubble, so to speak. I definitely was educated deep within the Catholic tradition. I have a lot of friends. Most of my friends are Catholics, but I come from a culture and am part of a culture for the last 20 years that is largely very, very much non-Catholic. But the people that I've been around over that time, the people who gravitate to places like that are usually kind of, you know, fairly intelligent, interesting people who think about things and are willing to have conversations. So, I mean, that's the environment that formed me, that forged me. And so that's what I try to do here is I try to approach things in a way that is not merely partisan or not merely, you know, dogmatic or something. So you're not going to get a bunch of cat. I mean, now that being said, occasionally I will just break into my weird version of catechesis. Occasionally I will start preaching and will ruminate and do something of like a 12-minute spiritual conference every once in a while. That's just what comes out. And so this, as I always say, this show is reality filtered through the lens of a particular human person. And so I will kind of look at reality, what I'm thinking. I will vent frustrations. Ranting and musing is pretty much the two modes of engagement I have with the world. And so that's, this show gets a lot of that. A lot of quiet reflection too, but quiet reflection doesn't really work on the radio because it sounds like this. Exactly. Yeah. So that would not be interesting to listen to. That was me quietly reflecting on whether it was a good idea to quietly reflect on the air. So I've been thinking, there's the introduction to the show, you know, that's what I'm doing. So I am having a hard time right now talking about anything, just kind of like, hey, well, this was interesting, though I did see a bat swimming on the internet today, and that was just wonderful enough to get me to mention it. Who'd have thought that big old bats could swim? A full-on bat swimming. It's got some serious, like, back muscles on it when you can see it up close and it's all wet. I mean, which makes sense. It flies, right? A lot of muscle there. But so occasionally I will find things that jump to the fore like swimming bats. But I just... as I said about the bat, I found this weirdly disturbing and freakishly beautiful, which is pretty much my view on reality and my self-image. So with that note, let's head off to the break. When we get back, I'm going to talk about what I am going to talk about instead of talking about what I don't want to talk about. And this is a very counterposition episode of The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so what do we want to talk about? Okay, so here's the thing. Before I talk about what I want to talk about, because I don't want to talk about what I don't want to talk about, I want to talk about maybe I'm wrong about not wanting to talk about what I want to talk about. So normally I would say, oh, hey, I saw this cool thing yesterday. I was like talking about movies I saw, superhero movies and stuff like that, or just talking about beautiful ideas. Like I have a little note on a future topic here to talk about the rise of design and the change in design. I've started to talk about it 4 or 5 times. Ideas that I have, some thoughts about the historical context of kind of the design movement that's happening in America. But here's the thing, is that I just see reality kind of semi falling apart around me at the moment. Right. So we're just in this weird moment where America is completely dislike, if not completely racially divided. We have been, if you want to see what that looks like, go read a history book. But I mean, we're being shown, we're being portrayed as racially divided. And there are definitely unarmed people of color being killed while being stopped by police in a way that probably white people wouldn't be killed. And that probably breaks down to a bunch of presuppositions on cops' part, on police officers' parts that are not, that just do not, there are a bunch of I think are presuppositions that are just weird anyway, right? Whether or not someone can just act very deliberately when faced with authority holding a gun, where, and if they don't do exactly as told, if they just reflex and move their hand the wrong way, it is okay to shoot them, combined with a culture that doesn't really trust authority and is kind of understandably not really okay with putting themselves in a situation where they got to do whatever they're told. Right. And at the same time, there's this weird idea that's, there's this idea that says, oh, no, 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 this is authority. You have to listen to authority. Because if we don't listen to authority, then there's just a lack of civilization. The rule of law must stand. And then at the same time, we see stuff like our current Democratic nominee, who was our former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, where the FBI comes out and says, here's the way the rule is written about handling classified information. She has broke this rule in every possible way. And at the last minute, we are going to reinterpret and change this rule so that we don't have to charge her with anything. So at the highest level, you know, Donald Trump can just not pay people because he didn't think that the air conditioning was cold enough. He can just not pay someone. He can just threaten to sue people. And whether or not he feels like it, and whether or not he can force your hand, if whether or not you're willing to take on a rich guy with a bunch of litigation, determines whether or not you get paid. But we're supposed to think that that there's this thing called the rule of law, right? And so as a result of all this frustration, there are people just like straight up killing cops, right? That's killing people. And the reason I'm thinking about this is because I saw the breaking news that the last law enforcement officer was acquitted in the Freddie Gray death, which means there's probably going to be giant protests at some point. There's probably going to be more violence. Some more cops are probably going to end up killed. Right now, on top of that, you have an 84-year-old French Catholic priest who's just, by all accounts, a good, meek, solid, hardworking, faithful priest who's just saying his morning mass with a few nuns and a few congregants and a bunch of some kids, like 19-year-old kids who have been weaponized by this ideology that says that you have to view all reality through the lens of our ideology, has weaponized these people by weaponizing the conflicts in their heart, the conflicts in their own internal struggle with trying to do what they want to do and not being able to do it, or this intense kind of pain between the way things are and the way things ought to be that anyone who is paying attention feels. You know, there's that old bumper sticker, that old kind of leftist slogan bumper sticker that says, if you're not outraged and you're not paying attention. I think that's true to a great extent, right? We should be outraged by a lot of things, right? And most certainly by ourselves and by our inability to love and by our inability to be good and by our inability to live in reality. And so they take these 19-year-old boys and they tell them the enemy is an 84-year-old Catholic priest and you have to go slash his throat on an altar. And they go, okay, God, let's do this. And they do it. Or they drive a truck through a crowd of innocent people watching some fireworks in Nice. Or they walk into a gay club and shoot a bunch of people. And it turns out that they were struggling with their own same-sex attraction. So these people, there's a great example. And the guy in Nice also was picking up men and women on a dating app, smoking drugs, they said, probably doing smoking drugs is the phrase that I heard used, and drinking extensively. And this guy is a radical Muslim that, you know, they don't believe in doing drugs. They don't believe in drinking alcohol at all. Homosexuality is punishable by death. And this guy was, so this is part of a twisted, weaponized metanoia, a conversion. It's just this, look, that it's where they're taking these people, whether it's, but then they're taking these people and saying, hey, that struggle you're having inside yourself, that struggle with the injustice that you see around you, that grating interface between the way things are and the way things you feel, you just feel like they ought to be, or even if you don't know what they're supposed to be, you know, it isn't this. See that thing? There's an enemy in this fight, and it's that 84-year-old priest over there. It's, or let's take it out of the Islamic context. You live in a ghetto. You don't have the options you think you should have. You feel this way. You don't, you feel like the cards are stacked against you and they did this. So no, the enemy is this police officer over here in Dallas, a police department that has been the model of changing how they deal with communities, especially communities of color that have historically had a bad relationship with the police. A model, a national model. These are probably, as far as the problems they would have with cops, these are probably some of the best cops, right? These are the ones that are actually doing what they want them to do. No, we're going to shoot them, right? Because he's the enemy. And if you can weaponize someone's pain, if you can weaponize someone's internal struggle, if you can weaponize that pain between the way things are and the way things ought to be, then you can use that for your own ends. And that's what we are seeing all around us. Now, if we take that same thing, we write it large, and we put it into the political sphere, that is exactly what we're seeing with our political world today. We are down to this situation where I have to either throw my vote away on a non-existent third-party option, or I have to pick my tyrant. And I resent it. I'm honestly, seriously pissed about this. Pardon my French. Pardon my Arabic. It's ridiculous. We're put in this situation where now, and then everyone now for the, I've griped about this a lot for the bulk of my adult life. And I'm about to turn 46. I have been voting for the lesser of two evils. And I'm down to the situation where now I look at these two and I'm like, okay, do you want to be hung or do you want to be shot? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if maybe one of them is being shot and one of them is drowning slowly. So then I can go, okay, well then this one's just going to be a less painful, quicker demise. Let's go with that. If you promise to shoot me in the head, I'll pick you. And then there's all these people spilling all these tears over the fall of the Bernie revolution. Because he was our one non-despotic, non-tyrannical option. But he wanted to make the state the tyrant. He wanted to elevate the state to the point of tyranny. I don't know. It's like you've got him wanting to make the state the tyrant. You've got Donald Trump wanting to just actually be a tyrant, as best I can tell. He does not understand the checks and balances, the role of the Second Amendment, the role of the First Amendment, the role of these different things. He doesn't understand the political process. And in the middle, you've got Hillary Clinton, who seemingly is the worst of both worlds. She wants to be a tyrant herself and thinks the rules do not apply to her because she's above the fray because she is in the business of making the state the tyrant. I'm just like, so in the midst of all this, in the midst of just being stripped of any, what feels like any freedom, I have a hard time talking about cat videos. Bat videos make the cut, evidently. It was a bat swimming. You have to see that. So rant over. Now I'm going to talk about the way I'm dealing with this when we get back after the break. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Lynn, how we crave a hanging in this dark.
Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a Friend of the Show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a Friend of the Show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media.
People singing, please don't stay, please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so here's another one of those shows where I go off the rails and off the notes and talk about what's going on in my heart. So to sum it up from the second segment, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. Now, it probably always has been, but I think it's going to hell in a handbasket in a new and unprecedented way. So the basic questions of the basic presuppositions of anthropology and ethics and all the above have completely been undermined at this point. Things that were just considered mental illness or just absolute craziness a couple of years ago are now fundamental human rights. Like to decide what gender you are. It's just a complete disjoining from nature to where biological sex means nothing. Now, and you know, okay, here's an aside, another little ranty aside. I apologize. Everyone, including some of my close friends, people I love and I consider dear, intelligent people, are saying that some of them are fairly leftist, and they're saying, look, can't we all agree that it's great that we have a woman president, we have a possibility of a woman president, the same way that, you know, when we had a black president for the first time. Here's a little shocking thing. I have a lot of friends that are hardcore Tea Party, like super conservative Republicans. The only thing they like about President Obama is that he's black. We're really not the racist. The right is not really the racist that they're made out to be. Everybody that I know across the board, even the very conservative people, they thought it was awesome that we have a black president. So why do I feel the same way about us having a woman president? Possibly. I'm just going to ask this question. I thought we were past gender. I thought gender didn't matter. I thought gender was just a social construct, and yet weirdly you can be born the wrong gender. I've ranted about that before. So I'm just saying, hey, here's a message. The rest of you that are not leftists can just stop listening right now. If you're not, yeah, here just is a message for my liberal listeners. You have to choose. Okay. Not because I say so, not because the Pope says so, because logic says so. You can't have gender as a social construct and have a little kid who was born the wrong gender. It doesn't work. Either gender is assigned by nature, and the same way you can have some kind of physical problem, you can be born the wrong gender in some way, or gender's not a social construct, or gender is a social construct. You can't have both. So just pick. I know it's hard because you have to define a gender either way, it's interesting. There is a pretty serious rift happening in the left over the old school liberal feminists versus the modern kind of new humanism. Because you see it all over the news right now. They're, to most of the boomer and even Gen X feminists, it really matters that we have a woman president. But during the Bernie campaign, all of the younger Gen X to the younger feminists were like, don't tell me who to vote for because I'm a woman. They were insulted by that. And it's partially because of how they view gender, right? Okay, there's an aside on gender in the public. Yeah, so why are we all excited? Why are we all excited? I thought gender didn't matter. I thought gender was a social construct or it can just be changed all the time. Maybe Hillary Clinton will, get elected and then come out before she's put in office. Maybe she'll come out as trans. Maybe then she'll be a man. Then we'll still be waiting for our first female president because she decided she's a man at that point, right? Gender is a completely fluid social construct. I mean, maybe on some days we'll have a female president. Maybe some days she'll wake up not feeling particularly feminine. And if you don't feel that, then you're not that, right? Because feeling is what defines it. Anyway, rant aside on gender. But we've got all this going on. And it just seems like, you know, part of me just, it doesn't want to talk about anything that is shallow at the moment. I can't even find words to talk about what I want to talk about. But then, you know, I think about C.S. Lewis and I think about that episode, that essay, Learning in Wartime. Very first thing we read at Thomas Aquinas College. And we ask the very serious question of, why in the world would we waste our time sitting around reading Plato or Chaucer or Shakespeare or talking about the nature of being as such or whatever? Why would we waste our time doing any of that while there are men dying in trenches someplace? And that the answer to that would be an entire episode. But suffice to say, he ends up coming down on the positive and saying these things, these great things, these things that are good for their own sake, are worth talking about. And it's what we're, it kind of breaks down to, remember that moment in the movie Dead Poets Society when the professor played by Robin Williams says, you know, banking and commerce and he lists all these very practical endeavors that a lot of these kids are wanting to go into. And he says, all noble pursuits and needed to preserve life. But what are we preserving life for? And he says, poetry, love, beauty, longing. He says all this stuff. He goes, these are the things that we preserve life for. These are the reasons why we're willing to take a bullet and go sell insurance all day long to keep a roof over our kids' heads. Because things matter more than that stuff. These things are means to an end, right? And so, like that, I think that, you know, Lewis also talked about how there's something particularly human about humor, even under duress. And he says that the a good way to define man is he's the guy that will make a joke on the gallows. You know, he'll make a joke with the executioner as he's about to be killed. My favorite example of that is St. Thomas More, when they put his head in the guillotine. His big long beard that he'd grown while under house arrest or in prison was up under his chin and was going to get hit by the guillotine. And he said, wait, wait. And he lifted his head and he swept the beard out from under him so that it would lay in front of the guillotine and not be cut in half. And he looks at the executioner and he says, a moment, please. He says, this hath not offended the king. And he spares his beard. So humor, even bat videos, probably worth defying these people that would reduce us. And we're going to be jovial, even flippant, even trivial, but definitely pursue the real things, the good things, the things that are for their own sake in the face of radical evil. Because it is this evil, it is this that the evil wants to take away, is our freedom to have leisure and to be jovial and to make jokes and to read books that are just simply beautiful for their own sake, or to make something nice for our family to eat and just sit down and make small talk and ask them what they did today. It is that they hate in some ways, right? Even though they want that for themselves, it's not that they hate that activity per se. They want that for themselves. They have just decided that we are the cause of them not having it. So as long as we have it, they can't. And that makes us the bad guy, hence the weaponization and the externalization of the struggle that I was talking about in the second segment. Now, but let's look at another example as we before we go to the break of what of what we need to do. And I'm getting slightly more positive. I'm cheering myself up. I'm reminding myself of the answers that I already know. And look at, as World Youth Day is taking place right now in Krakow, let's think about a moment in Krakow where young Karol Wojtyła is trying to study at the Jagiellonian University, studying Polish philology, philosophy and linguistics. And the Nazis come in and just take over. Now, some people pick up guns and form resistance. What does Wojtyła do? He hooks up with Kutlarczyk. They start the Theater of the Living Word, or the Rhapsodic Theater, which one of those? One of those two. And they start reciting in clandestine locations the great epics of Polish literature. They perform pieces from Adam Mickiewicz and like the Pan Tadeusz. They write plays and they do poetry readings. And for them, this is resistance. Now, there's a very good reason why that was resistance in relationship to Poland. But I think that type of thing is resistance per se. And so when we get back from the break, I want to talk about this as maybe a way forward. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so today is one of those days where I'm ranting and musing, and I can't bring myself to talk about anything too trivial. I'm facing reality. I'm facing this ridiculous possibility in our political system. I'm facing the possibility of martyrdom for people I love. I'm facing the weaponization of the struggle for equality and the struggle for freedom in our own country. I'm seeing the weaponization and the diminution of the rule of law at the same time. And faced with all this, I've looked at I've asked myself, how do we act in the face of this just tyrannical idiocy, this nihilistic kind of like, it feels nihilistic. It's a seemingly nihilistic, meaningless nothing that is assaulting us in reality right now. And how do we face it? And so I brought up the example of Karol Wojtyła, who became Pope John Paul II, as a young student, Jagiellonian University in Krakow, where many, many people are right now. Please pray for our young pilgrims at World Youth Day. And Wojtyła finds himself in the situation of just wanting to go to school and study philology. And the Nazis invade Poland. So the Second Polish Republic, I think it is, which is like finally their own country again for a short period of time. He's roughly the same age as the Republic at that moment. His father had fought in the war. And he's faced with the most crushing, mindless, irrational, totalitarian regime that anyone had in living memory had experience of. I'm not going to compare tyrants, you know, Hitler versus Pol Pot versus, you know, the faceless, nameless people throughout history who have done tragedy. But this is the, I mean, I suffice to say, saying that Nazism was just an absolute dark onslaught that no one had seen, and just bent on genocide and conquest. And faced with that, young Wojtyla and his friends read poetry. Now, is that just a cop out? Is that a pastime to remind yourself of a different time when things were better? Is it a moralistic and dogmatic imposition of a former state of things on the current by just plugging your ears and repeating the answers of the past? Or is it something more? Now, in the context of Poland at that time, it was definitely something more. But I think this activity per se, even in a different context, is. Let's look at the context of Poland at the time. So there were just whole swaths of human history when you would look on a map and there was no Poland. Poland wasn't about physical borders and political allegiances. Don't get me wrong, it was at its fullness when it had achieved its own republic, but Poland was like the Israel of Europe. It was just positioned between these great powers, that, and it was just almost geographically destined to be a pawn or a prize and a point of contention between powers bigger and more powerful than it. But hence Germany and Russia. But it was more than that. During that time, when there was no Poland on the map, there was the Polish language. There was Polish literature. There was the Polish approach to religion. There was the Polish approach to culture. And damn it, there were pierogies. There was Polish food. There was Polish culture. There was, you know. And so somewhere in that, you know, beautiful mix of food and love of soccer and Roman Catholicism, but Slavic identity and all this giant pot of influence that was Poland, it had existed without borders. And that's why the Nazis attacked their intellectual faculty, especially the ones that taught what we would call the humanities or the liberal studies. And they shot them and sent them to camps and stuff. They forbid the speaking of the Polish language. They did all, it's like they tried, because they knew that you could take these people's borders. We've done that. They're used to that. They've dealt with that before. You have to crush their identity. You have to keep them from feeling as if they can be who they are, right? And so in that context, the reciting of the Pan Tadeusz was an act of all-out rebellion. It was the refusal to be reassigned an identity. And it is that type of activity, that type of thing, and that mode of engagement with the forces that would oppress us that I propose today. That in the face of all of this, we have to love. In the face of all this, we have to make beauty. In the face of all this, we have to be agents of mercy and of even humor. We have to refuse to not be funny or trivial, or make something beautiful to eat just because, or to feed someone something beautiful just because, to even feed our enemies something beautiful just because. We have to still read books and still watch films and still drink good coffee and open a bottle of wine with a friend. We have to plant gardens and you know, pull zucchinis out of the ground and roast them with a little olive oil and salt and pepper and eat them next to steak. We have to do that. We have to continue living in our culture. We have to go to adoration. And regardless, if someone's going to come in and kill us, we have to just encounter the presence of the living God in the Eucharist. We have to get up, go for a quiet walk, and pray a rosary, or just go for a quiet walk and put ourselves in the presence of God and know that someone, you know, someone may come along and kill us along the way. We may become martyrs, but you know what? There's a lot of ways that you could go. It's like there's a good thing. I've always given you questions to, you know, I give you these questions to help filter your decisions in your life. What would you do if time and money weren't an object? What would you attempt if you knew you couldn't fail? What would you do if you knew you only had one day, 10 days, a month, a year, 2 years, 5 years to live? What would you do? You know, these different things that I ask you to think about over. I've done a few shows about some of these ways of filtering decision. There's a new one I just came up with. What would you want to be doing if you were martyred? So like your story ends up in The Lives of the Saints, part two, and you're Saint Bob the Martyr and companions. Who would those companions be? And what would you be doing? I think that if I was going to be martyred, it'd be like, he had, in St. Andrew of many places and possibly Denver, having sought out a good tri-tip with the fat cap on the outside, had covered it in garlic powder and salt and pepper and roasted it slowly for 45 minutes after searing the fat side. And after opening an Appalachian-specific Beaujolais and roasting some potatoes and consuming this beautiful meal, he and his friends were discussing Plato or pop music or the distinction, the relationship between Plato and pop music, or God, or anything, or the new show Stranger Things on Netflix, or even bats swimming on videos, and they're in the fire of community, eating and drinking something beautiful in the presence of those he loved. They stormed in with their jackboots or their long knives and ended the life of St. Andrew of somewhere, possibly Denver. And that's how he died. And that's why we mark his feast day here today. It's like, that is the way I would want to go. In community, in conversation, in the presence of beauty. And I think that's what we need to do. One of the stranger episodes of The Counter Position. I'm in a mood these days. All right, let's pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.